You know, before we begin, I just want you all to take a moment to think about the extent that people are willing to go in the name of the Sasana. The school has made special provisions to accommodate us today, haven't they? What could they easily have done? They could have said, I'm afraid today it's not going to be possible because we have some other function or event going on. So please inform your devotees that the sermon is not going to be held today and that we will resume from next week. They could have said that quite easily. And we would have known no better. We'd be none the wiser. But they didn't do that. Because when it comes to the sasana, everyone realizes, not everyone, those who have benefited from the sasana realize what the sasana is. So this is a vote of confidence from where I can see, that the people who are involved in this, in making this happen, you know, to hire a venue like the school to which you come, you park your vehicles with no fear, no worry, and to come up and sit very comfortably and listen to a talk like this, because we were looking for one. You know, for a few weeks we were looking for one. Not for today, but before we started these sermons. In Colombo City, to book a venue of the size that is needed to accommodate all of you would be around the region of 70,000, 80,000. That's not per year. Per session. Would you believe me, some people actually stepped forward and said, Swaminathan, if it has to happen, we are willing to pay the price. There were some amongst you who were prepared to do that. Like I say, you know, if I were still in a job, if I made a living, you would all come here free. I'd give you free transport as well, because I know what the sasana is. Having given my entire life to the sasana, I must say I have gotten much more than you may have yet. Because it's as much you give, you get back in return, as with anything. But when there were those who were prepared to do so, the management of the school, the chairman, primarily, got involved and he said he was quite happy for us to make use of these facilities free of charge. The truth is, it's not free of charge. Because what we all earn by making such offerings to the sasana, in fact, I don't even like to use the word donation. I looked up the word donation in the dictionary recently, and it says it's something you give to someone or some cause to help them. We don't help the sasana. The sasana helps us. So whatever you are able to offer to the sasana, I think we must all be glad and grateful that we are able to make such an offering. That is what my teacher always tells me. Never think that the sasana is privy to have our offerings, but rather it is us who are privileged to make an offering to the sasana. So, having said all that, I think it's important that we realize the extent and length that people are willing to go in the name of Nibbana. So, this is why it's important when we transfer merits, we recognize that and ensure that all those who wish to engage in these merits and rejoice in these merits receive such merits and they are able to progress on the path to Nibbana. And I think all of you can rejoice in these merits as well, because merit is not in the deed, it's not in what you give, it's in the thought, it's in the intention. So we can all rejoice in this, the fact that despite the changes, the whatever event might be going on, the school has made these adjustments to accommodate us today. And I think that speaks volumes. So we have a lot to get through today. You don't know that yet. I always ask Dasanandru, Swaminandru who comes to me, what did we talk about last week? I need a reminder, because now this week I've done 3 sermons at the monastery, one yesterday and the one day before on Poya Day. So speaking to different audiences, different crowd, sometimes I need a reminder as to where we stopped, because we progress at different rates. On Saturday's sermon yesterday, you know, that is a talk that is given to people who've been coming there for about 4 or 5 years. And then on the Friday sermon, on the Poya Day, the same, but in Sinhalese. And of course, at Rajagiriya, we have the privilege and honor of speaking to you. And again, I see a few new faces today as well. Of course, new faces will always keep coming, and I need to be cognizant of that. That's why I sometimes invite you, you know, try swapping places with me and see what that feels like when you have to speak to an audience and you want to take them on a journey and you want to talk to them about the next step, but then you realize there's a new face in the audience. Then you have to go back to the alphabet. But that's okay, because I enjoy doing this. Every word that I utter, I enjoy the benefit of it before you hear me say those words. So this is fine. I enjoy it. And I hope you do as much as I do. Right then, without any further ado, let us all take a moment to pay homage to He who is the most glorious one, the magnificent one, the fully awakened one, our Father, our Guide, our Master. He who laid down the path for us, for our deliverance, for our salvation. Let us take a moment to pay homage to His name, as well as remind ourselves that this is a pledge we take, an oath that we have taken upon ourselves to free ourselves from suffering.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa.
I'm to tell you off something. This Anagarika Mahatya that we've imported from Germany, okay, I'm trying to train him to become a monk. So you let me do what I'm trying to do with him. I hear a little bird told me that you're now trying to arrange a bigger alms bowl for him so that you can fill it up with all the stuff you want to put into it. Because the Swami Maharaj's alms bowls are big enough, you can fill it to your heart's content, right? But our Anagarika Mahatya's alms bowls are about half the size. I'm trying to train him up to only accept what he needs to sustain himself. But you lot, what happened to those square inch size sandwiches? We had a pact. We had an agreement. What happened to them? They have started expanding in size now. You're getting out of control. The other day, he came back and got into the car, and I had to ask him, do you have some in your pockets as well? One of these is, I'm going to have to sew pockets to his sarong. I told you the other day, like into our arms bowl, you can only accept until, you know, you fill it to the brim, and no more than that, right? So I'm trying to train him to conduct himself as a monk. So no, he does not need a bigger alms bowl, right? Because that alms bowl is big enough for 2 people, right? And now what you're doing is you're filling it up like a pagoda. I know what you're doing, right? So afterwards you also offer this box, right, with all the leftovers, right? Any food that is left, you put into a box and offer it. You know, that's fine. Whatever makes you happy, right? It's fine. I know, because I was just like you. When we have an opportunity to offer, we like to go an extra mile. And we want to go the full 9 yards. And I know what you're like, because you enjoy offering. And that is how you have become the people you are today. You know, it's in your blood, it's in your system, it's in your veins. Giving is in your veins, it's in your system. This is why you get so much. Look at what we've got today. You get the Dhamma, you get the necessities you need in your life, right? You live a fairly comfortable life, all because of what you've given. So you're so used to this, because you have a rich man's mindset. A rich man's mindset is not the same as how much money you have in your bank account. People are poor today because they have a poor man's mindset. They always expect, not give. Keep on expecting, you're never going to get. Keep on giving, now you're going to get. That is what the Buddhas teach us. So I know what you're like, right? But please, one of these days his parents are going to come down to see him, to visit him, and they're going to ask, that, where's that thin bloke I sent you? Now we have a fat hog. Right? They get worried. So, let him be. You're permitted to fill his arms bowl, but only until the brim, and not any more than that. If you have any leftovers, right, you can of course make some other offering, right, or put it into a box or whatever. Right, so can we please go back to that? Right, can we go back to those small sandwiches? You know, for the last few weeks, I have not been able to go on an alms round to the locals. Those people, they need a chance. They need to be able to give, and an opportunity to give. But you seem to snatch it from them now. Where's that gift of giving? Have you forgotten that? Anyhow, so whatever you brought today, it's fine. Okay, I'll let you offer this for today. So when you offer it, and you offer, you know, sandwiches this big, I might sneer at you. Don't worry. I go, right, Joe? Just ignore it. I'm just jesting. But, you know, the thing is this, right? See this word, dāne. It's a Sinhalese word, dāne. This word is synonymous with giving food, isn't it? Like right from when we were younger, like right from my very formative years, growing up, we've always known giving as dāne. Like dāne, you know. And in our heads, in our minds, it is one and the same as giving some food. Because whatever you've known, you know, we've grown up that way. When we say we are going to the temple to give a dāne, that is the same as a dāne. Everything's a dāne. A dāne is what you give as food. This is what we've got into we've been ingrained with this idea. But you know, truth be told, ladies and gentlemen, I can go for 3 days at a stretch hungry and I won't die. It's fine. Hunger is not my biggest concern. I know you like and you love to offer some food to the Swaminarayanas, right, to the Sasana and so on. But food, something to eat, is not the biggest problem we have right now. People suffer. I'm so glad that I've been able to get Mr. Daniel down from Germany, because I was able to preach in English. But what about those who don't understand a word of English? What about those out there who don't understand a word of Sinhalese? The Spaniards, the Germans, the Italians, the Japanese, the Chinese. Today you enjoy, you experience the bliss of Nibbana to whatever degree you've been able to assimilate it. But there are so many people out there for whom it is just even an unimaginary. It's so unachievable for them. It's such a distant goal for them, because they don't have the opportunity. So when you think of a dāne, I invite you to think of this mission that we are about. We are a mission. A mission to make a change in this world. A mission to give people their heritage. That is the Four Noble Truths. To help people to understand and realize the teaching, so that they can be freed. Some of you, when you finish the sermon, you come around and you tell me, Swami Nansa, I am beginning to experience a taste of bliss. I'm beginning to realize that the worries and the fears and the troubles that used to bother me don't bother me as much as they used to. That is not because you offered me dana. Like I said, I can go hungry for 3 days. Nothing's going to happen to me. I can go thirsty for 7 days and I'll still be fine. So when you think about whatever, right, in your capacity, making an offering to the sasana, whatever it is, like a robe, I can only wear one robe. I can only be in one room at one time. I can only use one washroom at one time. So I don't need a big mansion. I don't need 300 robes. Just imagine if all of you decided, instead of offering dana, you decided to offer a robe. Right? I won't be able to wear all of them, not for the rest of my lifetime. One of these things lasts me a good 5 years. At least 3 years. A robe lasts me at least 3 years. This one I got 2 years ago. See, I only have two of them, and that's enough. If one's on me, the other's on the clothesline after the washing. That's enough. Because I have trained myself to live a very simple life. In fact, some of the things that you offer, they're a surplus. We don't need so much. How many bars of soap am I going to need? How many toothbrushes do I need? I know you do it because you enjoy giving and you enjoy giving to the sasana, but here's an invitation I want to make to you. Before you spend your money on the sasana, before you go shopping and buying things to offer as pirikara, just take a moment and think about how is it that today you have been able to enjoy the bliss that you do. It is by being able to listen to the teaching. How about you and I, we get together and we do what we can to take the Dhamma far and wide. I want to make that invitation to you. How about you join me and extend this mission? Take it global. Take it to every country in the world. At the monastery, we are learning about 11 languages right now. Spanish, German, thank you. Hindi, Telugu, Tamil, Japanese, Korean. Soon enough, you'll start seeing little videos, snippets on our YouTube channels. Because our monks are making such a vehement effort to spread this teaching. Because we understand that it is the Dhamma that has set us free. It's not the food that we eat. I want you, as intelligent people, you know, perhaps this may fall on deaf ears if I spoke to, you know, say, a group of Achyammas in the village temple. They may not understand what I'm saying, because to them, you know, their world is very small. But you are a very educated people. You're learned. You understand the ways of the world. You understand how the world works. You understand what is necessary to take this teaching far and wide. That is our mission. The great Mahinda Thero decided, you know, with his father's blessing, he brought Buddhism to us. Right? He brought Buddhism to us and he taught us Buddhism. This is why we have this gift. It's time we took it another leap forward. One of these days we're going to have to take Buddhism to the moon. We're going to have to take it to Mars and to Mercury. Wherever human race is going to inhabit it, we're going to have to take Buddhism there. Because wherever there's a sentient being, wherever there's a mind that suffers, ladies and gentlemen, there's only one truth that can set it free. And that is the Dhamma. The Buddha belongs to all of us. But unfortunately, because people have today used religion as a means to separate, not to unite, to divide. Today, when they see someone like myself in a robe, oh, that's a Buddhist monk. We don't want to hear what they have to say. If any of you can learn a language, I invite you to do so. When you come here, we discuss the Dhamma, we learn the Dhamma. We realize the truth. And then, if you know another language, you can help your friend. You can help someone understand this Dhamma in their own language. So if you can do that, do that. This is what I'm saying. You know, we should think bigger than what we think already. Broaden your scope. I know I can make this ask of you because you're intelligent. You understand how the world works. I won't ask this from Achyamma. I won't ask this from a group of villagers who might come to the temple every Poya day. But I think of you, I have a liberty to ask. I want you to join this mission. And I'm not asking you to spend your money. That's not what I'm asking for. I don't spend a penny because I don't have any. I'll never ask you to do what I don't do. That would make me a hypocrite. I would never do that. I ask you to do what you can do for this mission, having given all that I have, and that is my life. I gave my wife up for the sasana. I gave my home up for the sasana. I gave all my property up for the sasana. And in the end, all that I had left was my life. I have given my life up for the sasana. Not because someone cajoled me or twisted my arm. It's because I realize that the sasana is the only way to achieve ultimate bliss. We are all here because we all want to get something out of the sasana, right? You're all people who have means. You're all people who are successful in their own way, right? But you realize, one and all, you all realize that what you have been able to accomplish so far in your life hasn't really ticked that box for you. It hasn't really taken you where you want to be today. Today, you know, there are still things that bother you. There are still things that worry you. There are still things that make you afraid and you have fear. So therefore, you come looking for the answer. That is what has united us, hasn't it? Aren't you living, breathing evidence that money is not the answer to this problem? That wealth is not the answer to the problem? That good looks and appearance is not the answer to the problem? Look at you, you're also beautiful people. Very smart, very intelligent. Education is not the answer to this problem. You are all educated enough to understand that. Getting on a plane and going abroad is not the answer to this problem. But if you ask half of this country, you know, what are your worries and how can we help fix them? They'll say, can you give me a ticket? Can you somehow get me a visa to go to France, to go to USA, to go to England? Here's my mother in exchange if need be. People are willing to give up their right arm for a chance to leave this place and go for greener pastures because they believe there they'll find the answer. But you've all done that. So you know that is not the answer. Then what is the answer? The answer only lays in the Dhamma. Today, whatever bliss, whatever freedom you are enjoying, ladies and gentlemen, is because of whatever degree to which you have begun to internalize the teachings of the Buddha. You know, in comparison to what he left behind, the prince, Siddhartha, what have we left behind? What have we given up? We've given up nothing. He was the king. He was the crown prince. He gave up his kingdom because he realized that this is not the path to happiness. So he went to discover it for himself. But that is an old story. Look at a more recent story. Look at yourselves. You've decided to give up your Sunday mornings to be here. Perhaps if you were at home, perhaps if you were running your businesses, you're running your empires, right? You could have made a few more dollars. You could have signed a better deal. You could have made more money. You could have made more wealth. But you've decided, you've realized that keeping on doing that is not the answer. It's just patching up for today. And then tomorrow we're back in the same place. So this is my invitation to you then. join me in this mission. You've been coming along long enough, I think, for me to ask this of you freely and openly. Join me on this mission. Help us to take this message far and wide. Help us to take this message across borders. And it doesn't cost you a penny. Do you understand? It is not what you have in your pocket I'm asking for. Be creative. The village peasant, if she brings a bar of soap, I say sopateva, because that is all she can do. The laborer who works for his daily bread, if he brings a toothbrush, if he brings a chivara, a robe, I say sopateva, because that is all he can do. Perhaps that is all he can do the whole year. Perhaps. But that is not the case for you. So don't think small. Think outside the box. Think outside. You cannot please me by feeding me. You cannot please me by making offerings to me. Let me tell you that up front. None of the offerings you do can please me. But whatever you do in the name of the Sasana, because the Sasana is my mother, whatever you do for the Sasana, I feel like what I do for my mother. What you do is to my mother. Because it is this mother, the Sasana, that gave me this new lease of life, a fresh beginning, an actual purpose to existence. Otherwise, weren't all our stories going to end the same way? Regardless of where we all began, regardless of how we built our lives up, weren't we all going to end the same way? In a big box and 6 feet deep. But the Sasana gave us new purpose, where everything we do can become more meaningful, can become more purposeful, so that our life on this earth can amount to something, can make some sense, so that people who will come after us can be grateful that we were there. Here, just as we are grateful today for the great elders Sariputta, the great elders Mahamoggallana, Mahakashyapa, and the Lord Buddha himself, Bhadra Kachayana, Kisa Gautami. These are the role models we look up to, because we know that they accomplished something in their lives. They freed themselves from fear. They freed themselves from grief and sorrow and lamentation. In their old age, they didn't suffer because they were old. Their bodies suffered, but their minds didn't. Can we say the same about ourselves? Yet, if not, then we have work left to do. I keep telling you from time to time, I don't want you to suffer when you're older. I don't want you to suffer when you're weaker, when you're frail, when you can't turn around on your own bed, when you can't take yourself to the washroom. I don't want you to suffer, ladies and gentlemen. Physically, I can't help you there because it's too late for that. But mentally, I can help you there. The teaching is there to help you. Right now, you think your right arm is your right arm. So if it ever gets paralyzed, you feel you're paralyzed. Because you internalize, you personify, you identify yourself with what happens to your body. That is because you see the two things as one. Right now, you can't see the nama rupa. You see the two of them as one unit. This is the foolery that your mind is doing to you. It is a gimmick. The teaching will help set you free. Yes, there are people out there dying from hunger. People die, they will always die from hunger. We can't fix that problem forever. People will forever die from hunger if they don't learn that they have to give. See, we are not about patching up problems. We are about fixing them at the root. Feed a poor man today, he'll learn that next day he doesn't have to work either, because he can expect you to feed him. But if you can teach him how to adapt a rich man's mindset, I know this is easier said than done, but this is the right answer. This is the actual solution to the problem. Then they will learn how not to be poor. For that, we need to nourish their minds, not their stomach. Because what you put in here is going to be out the next day. But what you put in here is going to last a lifetime. So whilst there are movements out there, whilst there are people who are there, you know, who fight for for causes like cancer, like hunger, right? Save the world from starvation. Great. Now hats off to them. Let them do that. But I think you have a bigger purpose than that. I'm just saying these things, I want you to consider. Just consider. Because you have more than money. Today you have the Dhamma. And you have intellect. You can be creative. Look at what this school does for us. Creating an environment where we can spread the Dhamma. The merits of which I cannot express in words. And that is not an exaggeration. Because it is not just you that listen to these talks. There's a camera there staring right at me. These words reach across borders. They go international. This gentleman is here because of this. Because if I stared at the camera, I don't see a face to preach to. But you bring yourselves here. You create an environment where the Swaminarayana can deliver a sermon. And they make use of it. Have a think about what I've just shared with you. This is not me saying from here on you shouldn't be offering any pedicure. That's not my, please don't get this the wrong way. I like to give you every opportunity to do that, because you can earn your merits in doing that, but I think there is a bigger opportunity out there. There are bigger, greater things that you can do. And they don't necessarily cost money. Perhaps it's someone you know. Perhaps you'll bring along someone. Someone who has access. Someone who can speak to a big audience. Someone who can influence a large audience. Maybe the chairman of an organization. Maybe the president of a committee. Maybe someone who is able to make decisions about our country. You know, what if one of these talks can make it into the school syllabus? How about the gift of giving? We teach our children about physics, we teach our children maths, we teach our children chemistry. All of those patches. Temporary fixes to a problem. Because when you are dead and you are in the, you know, people die and they go into the great hells, what good is chemistry then? If you are ever born in a Pretaloka, what good is physics to you? What good is biology? What good is math? You are now wholly reliant on the merits that you have acquired. There will be some who will pretend to be skeptics. They only pretend to be. Deep down inside they know that this is true. I'll prove it to you. Sometimes people say, well, you know, this is all nonsense, Swaminarayana, life after death, what's the meaning? There's no point in all of this. It's all just, you know, made up fake stuff. So I ask them, right, when your mother passes away, what are you planning on doing? Well, we're planning on, you know, as we do a dhani, and then we transfer merits. Well, why do you transfer merits? When a loved one passes away, what do we normally do? We do that. We do the merit transfer, right? When you pass away, don't you want your children to do the same for you? Wouldn't you? one day when you pass away, you know, I'm talking about the inevitable, right? What if your children came up to you and said, you know, you're a skeptic. We realize that. So when you pass away, we're not going to do any of that nonsense. We're just going to pack you in a box and, right, and throw you out, right? Because you just matter after that, right? You're no longer my mother, you're no longer my father, right? So you just matter, I just, you know, put you in the garbage. You're not going to be okay with that, are you? You will wish for them, you'll want for them to transfer merits to you. If you're going to be born in the heavens, why do you need their merits? Because deep down inside you're worried, what if? See, here's the thing with these teachings, ladies and gentlemen. You know, teachings about the afterlife, teachings about the preta worlds, teachings about the four great hells. Now, I don't usually go and talk about these things to a new audience, especially if I'm doing these sermons in English. And there's a reason for that. Because in an English audience, normally we'll get people who are a little bit more skeptical than a Sinhalese audience. And that's fine. Because sometimes we speak to a Western audience. For them, these concepts are very novel. And that's perfectly fine. Because I was once like that. So I know where people come from. Because I only thought what meets the eye exists and nothing more. But here's the thing. What if it's true? Just what if? What if there's 1% chance? And 99% you're right, but 1% you're wrong. Now what are you risking? You're risking eternal damnation. You're risking being born in a preta world. If the Buddha were true, he is. Right? But if you're not sure, but what if he is? What if he was true? He says, amongst all the beings in this world, the only beings that I can see who upon death will be reborn into a blissful plane, so this includes the human worlds, the deva worlds and the brahma worlds, are about the same as the amount of grains of sand that I can get on my thumb, on my thumbnail. In comparison to all the beings who die and go into the four great hells. And that by amount is about the amount of grains of sand in this on this planet. This is the Buddha who speaks. What if he's true? We can be skeptical as long, you know, as much as we like, but what if he's true? And besides, even if we were to accept that what he said may be true, he's not asking us to do anything bad. Anything that doesn't make sense. Anything that would bring us harm or evil. What he's asking us to do is engage in merits. Transfer merits, all of these things are good deeds. There's no harm that can ever come to one by doing so. But a lot of people out there, they don't know any of this stuff. They think happiness comes in boxes called PS5s. They think happiness comes in a television. They think happiness comes in a smartphone. And Apple releases one every year. So they queue outside the Apple store waiting for the next release. Because they think that's what happiness comes in, little boxes. I don't like saying this, but I'll say it anyway. One day you'll realize that I was true. I don't like saying that. But it has a patronizing tone to it. A condescending tone to it. I don't like that. But let's not take that risk. Whilst we all still have the chance, let's do whatever we can. Because the merit is the universal currency. You can spend your dollars when you're in the States, you can spend your pounds when you're in Britain, but you can spend your rupees while you're here. But when you leave this place, none of those things matter. What matters then is the universal currency. The reason you have something today, ladies and gentlemen, is not because you work hard. Working hard only creates the environment to draw the merits that you've already acquired. Aren't there people who work tremendously, but they don't have a penny to their name? Look at laborers. Look at people who work their socks off. They work day and night. Not a moment to stop. Not a moment to be with their families. They work. Modern business scientists will tell you, well, they work hard, not smart. Yes, but nevertheless, they still work. But working and working and working doesn't make them richer, because they've not given. They don't have the energy that needs, that can be translated or transformed into currency, the currency that we use today. But perhaps amongst yourselves, you know, there are people who don't have to work so hard. Every turn you take, there's something there. Every business deal you make, something prosperous comes out of it. They seem to be productive. That's because of all the merits that you have acquired. Take credit for your own merits. It's not someone else's doing that you enjoy today. It is your own doing. I'm saying take credit for that. You don't have to shy away from that. Take credit for it. You have earned your own merits. So let's open this truth. Let's share this truth with so many other people who need it. Because today you have your mother, your father, but let's be honest, right? Every man and woman on this planet has one day been a relation of ours. One day they have been a mother to us, a father to us. So if we are grateful, we have gratitude, then we must think of them as we think of our own. So I invite you to join me on this mission. That is what I ask you to join me. I think the second or the third talk, I was talking to you about drugs and how that is has overtaken a large part of this world. It's bringing developed nations to its knees. And in the next few years, ladies and gentlemen, it's going to be such a terrible problem. People will have no means to overcome it. But this is human potential wasted. Human life wasted. A chance to do something good for yourselves wasted. And back when I spoke to you about this, I warned you that soon enough, some of these more recent drugs, they're going to start making their way onto our streets in Sri Lanka. And lo and behold, they have. Back when the pandemic struck, you know, a few years ago, they discovered this new drug called Trank. It's horse tranquilizer. Imagine what it does to a human being. They use it to tranquilize beasts, animals, 3-4 times your size. Imagine what it does to a human being. The medical name for it, the chemical name for it, is called xylazine. So when we first got news of this, I shared it with our audience back at the monastery, and I invited our people to brace themselves for this and to make sure that you put in the safeguards necessary to protect your children. You are grown up enough to understand right from wrong, but your children are not. And besides, they don't spend the best part of their lives with you, honestly. You know, they leave home at 4 or 5 in the morning, and they return home again 5 or 6 in the evening. A few hours they have to pet themselves with their mother or their father, but even then you bring your work home. So you hardly have any time to be with your children, and the only time you have with your children, you're both asleep. And then they wake up the following morning, and then they leave home. On their way to school, they're with their friends. Do you vet their friends before you let them have their associations? They're on the school bus. They're on the trains. They're on the streets out there. It's becoming a pandemic now. Because unlike the corona pandemic, you can't put a mask on to save yourself. Because this is not a physical problem. It's a mental problem. It's a psychological problem. And there's a reason why people are prone to drugs. There's a reason why they go on to take drugs. Because they have depression. They're not happy in their lives. Breakups. They don't know how to deal with them. Because they don't have the Dhamma. There's not a lesson in the science book that teaches you how to deal with a breakup. There's not a lesson in the history book that teaches you how to deal with loss. chemistry doesn't teach you that. How to deal with grievance, how to deal with bullying. Sometimes you only realize that your children or maybe someone you know, a child you know, has been bullied a long while after it has happened. By then, they've already resorted to other means of trying to recover themselves emotionally. That emotional damage that it does, ladies and gentlemen, it is so terribly difficult to help them recover from it. So what they do is, they look for other ways and means of gratifying themselves. I want to show you a video. This is what I showed you. At least there were some of you at the monastery when I put this on show. A few months ago. And back then I said, beware, soon enough it's going to come to Sri Lanka. And it has. And I've got the evidence to show it to you now. This has been doing rounds on social media. And one of our devotees brought it and showed it to me. They behave like zombies. Not out of will, it's what the drug does to them. You've seen zombies in zombie movies, right? This is real life zombies. That's what we have. This is a big problem in Philadelphia. Back in 2000, around that time is when it started. With the pandemic, it shot up exponentially because people were locked in their own homes. They couldn't do anything. They couldn't go out. They couldn't. Here's why. As I say these things, reasons come into my head. That's why I stop myself. Right? You see, how do people know to enjoy themselves? You speak from your own experience. Going to the theaters. Going to the playground. Being with friends. Going abroad. Going to the gigs. What happens when the pandemic comes? You can't leave your homes. Now what about going to the park? What about going to the playground? What about going to the beach? What about going to the theaters? What about the movies? What about the musicals? You can't go to any of them. But you still have the problems in your head. So then what do? Put two and two together, ladies and gentlemen. That is why when the pandemic came, drugs shot up exponentially, and drug use. Today, even in Sri Lanka, the local authorities are complaining that they can't cope with the size of this problem. Someone showed me recently that in the newspapers, the government is now looking for help from the public. They're asking the public for counsel, for guidance on how to solve this problem. The government is asking for our help. What does that tell you? It has got out of hand. You still have a smile on your face because you don't know. I can't say it hasn't happened to your children, but you don't know it has happened to your children. That is why you still got a smile on your face. Here's something I ask you to do when you get back home. Ask your child whether they know someone that does drugs. Ask them. I challenge you. More than half of this room will come back next week and tell me, yes, Swami Nuhansa, my child knows someone who does drugs. I don't need your dhani, ladies and gentlemen. I can go hungry for 3 days and I won't die. But my heart cries out for these people who can be helped if only they were given the teaching. They don't know how to deal with bullying. They don't know how to deal with a breakup. They don't know how to deal with stress. They don't know how to deal with anxiety. They don't know how to deal with depression. There are people who do counseling. Bless their heart, they try to do their best. But counseling, if it does not include the Four Noble Truths, is not counseling at all. It's just a temporary fix. Because it is the Four Noble Truths that talk about the origin of suffering. And for as long as they have the emotional burden, for as long as they have the emotional turmoil, they're not free. How come take a walk in the park is a problem to anger? It's a temporary fix, yes. You know, focus on something else and the problem will go away. What's that? Wishes don't wash dishes. That's wishing away a problem. It doesn't work. We need to give them the Dhamma. You need to start at home. This is coming. Please don't tell me one day that I didn't warn you. Please don't tell me, Swami Nwazi, you asked us to come to your sermons, to your talks. You never told us this was happening to our children. Well, I tell you now, it is. This is the first spotting. Or at least the one that was gotten recorded on camera. A young girl. Who do you think gave it to her? Probably a young bloke. Who's going to speak on their behalf? How are we going to fix this problem? Start a rehabilitation center and lock them up? And try to wean them off drugs? Those programs are wholly unproductive. It is not I who say this. It is the people who run these places. What has happened to our nation? We were not a people like this. In every school you look, there'll be children who do drugs. I can guarantee that. Sometimes teachers don't know. Parents don't know. But you know what? They come and tell us. Because they know their secret is safe with us. Beating them up, locking them up in a dark room is not going to fix a problem. Because you're punishing the body for a problem of the mind. How does that fix a problem? Giving them a cold shower is not going to fix the problem. Whacking them is not going to fix the problem. Locking them up in a room is not going to fix the problem. Because that is punishing the body for a mental problem. How does that work? When you get a fever, what do? Sing a song? You take a paracetamol. Why? If it's a physical problem, you've got to fix it with something physical. Right? So how is beating them up going to fix them if it's a mental problem? Computer games are killing our young people these days. I spoke about this, I think, 1 or 2 weeks ago, at least briefly. Parents don't realize the damage that it does to the young mind. You know, you think it's safe because they're not actually killing anyone. Remember the example I gave you? Pilots, they train in a simulation. You train your mind to react violently. It's a mental training, ladies and gentlemen. It's a mental training. You train your mind to react violently. You train the children's mind to respond with violence, with aggression. Hit me, I hit back. This is the training that they get. So they get that training in front of their computer station, and then when they get to school, you know, someone comes and hits them, what do? The only thing they know to do. Parents, wake up. Teachers, wake up. People who care about our nation, people who care about our young children, people who care about our future generation, please wake up. I can go hungry, it's fine. But there are people dying. There are people suffering. And they have no refuge. They have no refuge. They don't know the Buddha. They think this is the Buddha. So they think offering some flowers once every poya day means they're Buddhists. If the Buddha were alive, today would be the day he would let go of his life essence. Today would be the day he would decide, you know what, enough of this, I'm going to go. If the Buddha were alive today, he would give up today. You know, we call this the land of the Buddha, right? Budunge Deshe. Where is his teaching? If you've seen my teaching, you've seen me, is what he said. Yo dhammam passati, so mam passati. Where is the dhamma? It's in the books. It's in the libraries. It's on the internet. But it's not in people's hearts where it needs to be. There are two things a young child needs. One, your milk, mother's milk. Two, the dhamma. Just as badly. So as a mother, you can't be content that you fed your child. You can't be content as a father that you've given them a good education, that you brought them up, you've given them a good upbringing. You've built something, a legacy for them. You've built them a business. You've given them a good education. You've sent them abroad. Please don't be content with that, because that is not going to be the end. The moment you let them go from your safeguard, they're going to go out into society. And society is not so kind. The other day I talked to you about the dark web. Yeah, I talked to you about those websites out there. You can buy these drugs on the open market. Recently one young man who came to the monastery looking for our help, he said, Swami Nohan sir, people don't realize how bad this drug problem is. In any town in Sri Lanka now, within 10 minutes, just a phone call away, in 10 minutes you can get access to drugs. Welcome to Sri Lanka. Where's the Sri in our Lanka? What happened to it? Our Lanka was only Sri because of the Buddha's teaching. Otherwise, it's just Lanka. It is the Buddha's teaching that made our country great. Sri means great. Great Lanka. That is what Sri means. For it to be great, ladies and gentlemen, we have to have something that is great. And we do. Or at least we did. Our countries can't survive without the Buddha's teaching. It can't survive. It is our lifeblood. It is part of our ecosystem. Without it, we won't survive. To this day and age, you know, despite all the influences that have come from the other parts of the world, Sri Lanka is still intact because of the Buddha's teaching. Not because of Buddhists, but because of the Buddha's teaching. Because of the Four Noble Truths. We used to be a nation that was a blessing to the whole world. People used to look up to us for counsel. We used to be the great barn of the Eastern world. But today, we import everything we need. It's demoralizing. Today we have become slaves in every spirit of the world. But we were not a nation like that. I'm not trying to be nationalistic, but I appeal to you to be part of this mission. You know, whatever life you have left in your days, I mean, you know, we're not going to live for another 100 years, right? None of us are. From the youngest child in this room to the eldest person in this room, like, none of us are going to live for another 100 years. But in the time that we do, let's do two things. One, let us assimilate the teaching. Let us make use of our legacy, our inheritance from our great teacher, and free ourselves from suffering. And the second thing, as we do, let us ensure whatever energy that is left in us, however far we can go on this venture, to spread the teaching far and wide. So that not only our fellow brothers on this land, but also those in countries across the oceans can benefit from this. Yes, we must educate our young children, because to face the modern challenges, to be competitive in this world, yes, we must educate them. I have a lot of respect for organizations like this place. A good focus on children's education. Excellent. But that is not the only thing we must do. We must inculcate good values with them. Virtues, discipline. How many children go to Dhamma school these days? Do yours? Don't answer that question. But you send them for tuition classes, you send them for music class, you send them for basketball class, you send them for chess class, you send them to violin class and flute class, or dancing class. What about Dhamma class? Where they actually teach you, where they actually teach the children who you are, so that they can actually identify who their mother is. I have had the misfortune, I can't say misfortune, it's for their fortune, people who have come up, young people this day, you know, in this day and age, they come to say, Swami Nohan says, sometimes I get so lustful, I can't stop to think that this lady is my mother. They say that. I'm not making this up, folks, can you believe me? In those moments, I get so heated up that I don't care that it is my mother. If you don't give your children the Dhamma, ladies and gentlemen, lock up your laundry basket. Let me tell you that much. Sorry I have to spell it out to you in these words, but this is going on out there. That's why I speak of it. If I needn't speak of this, I wouldn't. But young people come and tell us these things. Soon enough, I'm going to have to ask you to lock your bedroom door as you go into it. And ensure you cover up your keyhole as well. Don't believe me? Wait a while. Give it a few more years. I'm telling you what I hear through my 2 years. Young people, they walk up to us and they share with us problems that they wouldn't have the courage to look at their mother's face, their father's face and share with them. These are the young people who come to us for solace. They have problems. Problems that the internet cannot fix. Problems that a mobile phone cannot fix. WhatsApp doesn't fix that problem. Facebook and a Facebook profile doesn't fix that problem. But everyone has one of those things. When are we going to act? And what are we going to do about it? It's not just my job to fix this problem. So don't you all just look at me and go, Swami Nasa, that's why you're a Swami Nasa, go fix the world. I'm not Superman. That's why I ask you to join this mission. Recently we started to do a Dhamma school with an international school. One of the parents had asked the teachers, when are the tests? Is that all you ever think of? From womb to tomb, is everything, it has everything got to be a test? When are the tests? How are you going to test them? What's the syllabus? You know, I wouldn't be surprised if they send the child to the Dhamma school and then also send them for tuition so that they can perform well in the Dhamma school. I wouldn't be surprised if the parents did that. Your children are not machines. They're human beings. they have minds, and minds suffer because of ignorance. We have a Dhamma school at a monastery. We don't give them tests. We only give them one test, the test of humanity. That is the test we give them. We ask them how they conducted themselves at home. We ask them to tell us what happened at school. Someone says, child comes and says, Swami Nahan said, yesterday my friend took my eraser without my permission. And we ask them, what did you do with that? They used to say, I snatched it back. But now they say, Swami Nahan, I realize he probably doesn't have one. Maybe he can't afford one. So I went home and told my mother, and she gave me two more. One for me, and she said, give the child another one. They probably don't have enough. See, what is the test? That is the test. If one child doesn't have a pencil, break your pencil in half. But don't give the half that doesn't have the eraser on it. Give the half that does. That is what our children at the Dhamma school do. They sharpen the half that has been split with the eraser, and they give that half and keep the other half for themselves. And you ask, why do they do that, Putta? Why did you do that? Well, if they don't have a pencil, they don't have an eraser either. That's why I gave it to them. Because what they understand today is what you give is what you get. But look at the world out there. When people want to get things, aren't they willing to auction their parents off? I know young people who take pictures of their sisters and put them online. I used to say I know of them. Today I say I know them. Because they have come to us looking for refuge. That is how they make their pocket money. So if you have two children, a brother and a sister, beware. They have to make their money. A few pictures online, they get their money. Money for what? This is all well planned. They are masterminds. They are masterminds. If you watch some of these documentaries about how they make these drugs and how they the transportation system, the whole system of spreading it out, you know, those guys are masterminds, ladies and gentlemen. They know how to deal with the law enforcement authorities. They know how to deal with the agencies. They know how to deal with the police. They know how to deal with all the other, the various other processes and systems that are in place to prevent them from doing that. They know all this. All of those things have been set in place, and you know, all that is needed to jump a hoop is, why so? Because this is the answer to happiness, isn't it? When people think that happiness comes in a box, happiness comes in a bottle, happiness comes in a packet, right? And happiness comes when you get on a plane and go to Hawaii, then what you need is the means to get you there. So, the means to get you there is this. The Yangimanli. I speak so passionately about this because to me, like I said, you know, you're all, I feel about all of you as my mother. Because it used to be, I could see myself, I could see this Swaminathan, I could see this madam, this lady and so on. But nowadays, what I see is there are bodies in which there are minds. So if you ask me, Swaminathan, who do you want to attain Nibbana first, me or this Swaminathan? I have no answer to that question. Used to be, get me first. Get me to Nibbana first and then get that Swaminathan across. But now, I don't give you that answer. Because it makes no sense. For me to say that I need to get my Nibbana first and then others later means I'm a hypocrite. I'm still focused on myself. I'm self-conscious. If we are truly about others before self, how can it be my Nibbana first and others later? But yes, the Buddha did say, work on your salvation first and then help others. But there's a meaning to that that transcends what I just explained to you. And that meaning is, I can't help others if I don't know what Nibbana is. How can I show you Nibbana if I don't understand Nibbana? In that sense, of course, my Nibbana comes first. But in the sense of who needs to be freed first? Chittas need to be freed. Whose chitta? Wrong question. Wrong question. If you can answer the question, whose chitta, it is not Nibbana you are talking about. Remember, there is no doer, only the done. Then there is no one going to Nibbana. A chitta goes to Nibbana. But in our illusion, deluded, we feel that it is I to whom this mind belongs, it is I to who this body belongs. That is why people are more focused on their salvation. People are focused about their happiness than that of others. You know, this is the perfect trap. That is why you need the perfect one to set you free from that. The perfect trap is the notion of self. If I was God, or say the demon, if I were the devil and I had to create this world from scratch, right, I would do it no differently. In every mind that I can create, I will instill self-consciousness, the notion of self. Because the moment you put in the notion of self, each self will try and attempt to safeguard itself. That is what people are doing right now. And so when everyone's fighting their own battle, fine, everyone is safe. But not so. If each and every one of you only cared about yourself, there would be mayhem. Yes, but the world would exist either through violence or love. You know, one is equally as bad as the other. Love and hate are just two sides of the same coin. Buddhist teaching is neither about love nor about hate. It's about metta, karuna, mudita and upeksha. It is not love. It is not hate. Love is affection, hate is affliction. Two sides of the same coin. You love people who are like you. You love things that are like you. You love people who like to please you. And you hate people who don't like you. You hate people who you don't want to be with. You don't like to be with. Who don't do the things that you like them to do. See? They're equal vices, not virtues. But as you begin to understand the Dhamma, ladies and gentlemen, you begin to realize that both love and hate are all manifestations of ignorance, of delusion. See, to like something or to hate something or to compare it, one of these three things can only happen when you see an it. Isn't it? If I ask the question, do you love? You have to ask the question, who? And I ask, do you hate? You have to ask the question, who? Do you compare? Again, you have to ask the question, with whom? See? Raga, dvesha and moha. Love, hate and comparison. This comparison is what gives you the sense of pride, ego. Either a super ego or an inferiority ego. Or the ego that you are equals. The same. There are three ways in which you can compare. I am more, I am less, or I am equal. They are all comparisons. Uchamana, Seyamana, Sadisamana. Sadisamana, Hinamana, and Seyamana. Seyamana is, I am better than them. Hinamana, I am below them. Sadisamana, I am equal to them. These are all mana. Pride, ego, comparison. Moha. You can't see what I can see right now, can you? I see big, high-rising buildings. I see big office buildings. I see towers, homes, in the far horizon. People. People suffering. high rising because they think one day they can reach happiness. So they keep on going up. They keep on trying. One day we will reach happiness. In every home out there lives a man, a woman, a child, not knowing how to free themselves from suffering. And we are here under this roof with the answer. When are we going to take it to them? So if you have any influential power on a group of people, you know, when you have a cause that you want to fight for, you speak up, don't you? Equal rights for blacks and whites. Equal rights for men and women. Equal rights for all. Equal rights for the disabled or the differently abled. You speak up. You speak up when you care passionately about something. So why am I speaking up on behalf of suffering? Or freeing ourselves from suffering? Because I am passionate about it. If I can't help my mother today, then it's fine. She's not ready for it. Bring the next person in. That is the mentality that I have today. If she's not ready for it, when she's ready, I'll help her. As long as there's someone on that seat, I will talk. I'll speak. It doesn't need to be anyone in particular. It doesn't need to be a Muslim, doesn't need to be a Buddhist, doesn't need to be a Hindu or a Christian or a Jew. It doesn't matter. Because here's what is true. Whether you're human or divine, or even if you're the Almighty, if there is ignorance in your mind, you suffer. Full stop. The Four Noble Truths is universal. And that is not because I'm a Buddhist. It is not because the Buddha taught so. The Buddha only realized the truth. He didn't invent the truth. You can't credit the Buddha with inventing the truth. He didn't invent it. He only realized it. We hold him in high regard because without any help and on our behalf, he realized it. That is why we hold him in high regard. So I don't like to think of him as a religious leader. He's a philosophical thinker. That is what or who he was. So I urge you, ladies and gentlemen, if you're a mother, if you're a father, if you're a teacher, or if you plan on becoming a mother, a father, you better act now, you better act soon. All I'm asking you to do is to help your children learn a little bit of the Dhamma. And this Dhamma is not about how Prince Siddhartha walked on the seven lotuses. That is history. Fact or fiction, that is history. I'm talking about the Four Noble Truths. Ekayanoyam bhikkave maggo sattanam visuddhiya. I'm talking about that. I'm talking about the science of the mind. I'm talking about how attachment is the cause of suffering. Let's help them learn that. That is what you learn when you come here. So as you free yourselves, help them free themselves because this is coming. This is just around the corner. You know, that didn't look like a village town, did it? That was probably somewhere around in Colombo. So, it's just around the corner. Excuse me. But do me a favor, because I asked you to do so. Get home. When you get home, speak to your child and ask him or her, Putaha, do you know anyone that does drugs? You don't have to tell me who it is. You can tell them. Don't have to tell me who it is. Do you know anyone who does drugs? You'll be shocked. And your child is only 7 years of age. He's only 10 years old. She's only 12 years old. And she knows a handful of people who already do drugs. Who's next? Who's next? Here's why I think the Dhamma will help fix this problem. Because the Dhamma helps you to untangle this mess that's in the mind. It helps untangle suffering. It helps untangle depression. It helps untangle anxiety and stress, boredom, things like that, loneliness. It helps untangle all these mental agitations. It helps untangle fear. Some do it out of fear. Some children are, you know, they're threatened. Go deliver this parcel to that person. Otherwise, they get threatened. And if I ever catch you speaking about this to your parents, these things happen. In our Dhamma school at the monastery, recently we did a program for them. A few weeks ago we did a program for them on drugs and preventing themselves from drugs. And secondly, we did recently a program on sexual abuse. How to keep themselves from sexual abuse. And I'm not going to go into the detail of it, but here's one thing we did. And I invite parents here to try it. Because what we've learned, ladies and gentlemen, is sometimes when children go through this, they get so mentally agitated that internally they get shut down. They feel like something dirty has happened to them. They can't speak up after that. They get shut down emotionally. Now they're scared. They're worried. They feel that they, you know, somehow, even the parents would shun them off if the parents found out. So what we did was, we gave each child a little card. On one side there was a smiley face. On the other side there was a sad face. So we told the children and the parents, every week we want you to take that card to your mother, to your father. We told the parents, every week get your child to come and show you the card. Ask them, Putta, how are you feeling today? Just show the card. Because if they can't find the words to express themselves, at least by showing the card, that's an indication that something is wrong. It may not necessarily be drugs, might not necessarily be that they've been sexually abused, but something's wrong with them. At least that can get you to start question them. Hold them by their hand, sit them on your lap, give them a pat and ask them, Putta, tell me, what's going on? You have Ami here for you. Tell me what's going on. Maybe they'll say, you know, you didn't take me to watch the latest Superman movie, that's why. That's okay. But still, you've asked the question. Because one of these days, they're going to tell you, this is Aya at school. He came and touched me. I didn't like the way he touched me. Now you can start questioning. But you need to get it out of them. If you don't, it's going to stigmatize them. Plenty of times where we've done surveys personally of people who go on to molest young children are people who've been molested themselves. These are the facts, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not making this up. These are the facts. Because in their younger years, their youthful years, their teenage years, they wanted that experience. Because they didn't know what to do with sensuous lust. They didn't know what to do with it. Lust came into their hearts. It completely overwhelmed them. Right? And now they don't know what to do. Because they don't teach it for physics. What to do about that? They don't teach that for geography. Of course, that is not what geography is for. But it's the parents' fault for only teaching them physics and geography. You know, bringing a child into this world is one thing. Even animals can do that. But giving them a good upbringing, that is your responsibility. That is why we are humans. We have the influence, we can make an impact on the future, on posterity, on the future of this world by making an impact on our children. Please, ladies and gentlemen, I ask you to play your part in this. I know you, I know you dote on your children. I know you deeply care about them. But if you're not doing enough, I ask you, step up to the game. No matter what you do, you will always be one step behind the curve. These guys are always one step ahead of the curve because they know how you think. To teach young children to get to do whatever they want, all they have to do is show them a toy. Give them an armband. Give them a wristband. Maybe give them a little watch, a gift, something. Something that they like. Maybe a sticker. That's all. Maybe a plane, you know, a pack of playing cards. That's all. Or say, you know, Puta, I'm going to show you a film. Do you want to come? Oh yeah, I want to come. Right, well if you want to do that, take off your trousers. Too much? Hopefully I'm not saying things that you don't already know. If you are, then wake up. These things happen across our nation. I know it not from reading it in the newspapers. I know it because young people, they come to us and they reveal it all. Things that they can't tell their teachers. Things that they don't have the guts, the courage to take, to speak to their parents. They come and share with us because in this, in us, they trust. They see a Swami Mahansa and they trust. That's not to say that every Swami Mahansa must be trusted. Because just putting on a robe doesn't make one a virtuous or a holy person. This is the Dhamma that does that. I'm not saying anyone's bad, but a monk or a layperson without the Dhamma is the same. Because where do you put the robe? On the body. How does that fix the mind? How does that free the mind from suffering? How does that free the mind from wanting? It doesn't. It is the Dhamma that does that. So I'm saying young children today suffered, ladies and gentlemen. This is just one example of it. If you just go on, you know, on the internet, go on YouTube and you know, just type in zombie drug, you'll see how severe this problem has become. In developed nations where they have all the things that they need, you know, we are a developing country. Some families can hardly make ends meet, right? But in these countries where they've got everything, they've got all the technology, they've got all the science, they've got all that, but still, this is what's going on. But like all things that end up eventually in our country, it's coming to us, it has come to us, and soon enough you'll start seeing zombies on Gold Road. Walking zombies. Mark my words. On the 1st of October 2023, so have I said, on Gold Road you will be seeing walking zombies. Ah, Children's Day, isn't it? I wondered why I was talking about children so much. The thought only occurred to me, it's Children's Day. This is why I asked you to join this mission. I'm not concerned about what goes in my stomach. You know, there are some days, you know, we go on doing sermons, you know, some days all I have is a cup of tea. Hunger is not my problem. I'm used to being hungry. I'm used to this. You're only talking about the time when I was a human being. What about the time when I was an animal? When I was a preta? Hunger, you know, that's my best friend. I'm used to it. Hunger is not my problem. So don't you worry about trying to feed me. I need you to join this mission. There are hearts that are ailing. There are minds that are weeping. We need to do our part to fix that problem. And I speak to you because I know you have the power to do that. You know the people who can make such a change. You have the energy to do that. You have the influence to do that. Like I said, I wouldn't make the same ask to a bunch of, you know, people in the local village. I wouldn't do that. It makes no sense. But you are an educated people. You're very learned. You understand the way the world works. You understand what people need. Right? Because perhaps some of you, you know, you are leaders in your organizations. You are managers. You are people who decide the future of some people's lives. So you can make a change. Let's be part of this movement. We only have another 2,500 years left, ladies and gentlemen. After that, the Buddha's teaching will be no longer. So whatever we do, we've got to do it now. If you imagine a man living for 100 years, that's only 25 times you can be reborn and the Dhamma will be gone. 25 times. That's not a lot. That's a lot of time. 25 times. And actually, it's less than 2,500 now. I think what we are now, 2,500 something, right? 60? Something like that? 2,500? 2,560 years, something like that? Buddha Varsha? Yeah. So we have less than, we have about 2,400 to go. And towards the latter part of this, the essence of the teaching will be lost. You know, it goes in a cycle. There will be times where the meaning surfaces and we can make use of the teaching. Other times, you know, there will be monks, they will be going for almsgivings, they will be doing pirith. But the true teaching will not be there. How many times have you come up to me and said, Swami Nahasa, we've never heard a sermon like this before. That is not my magic. It's your merit. You were fortunate enough to be born and come here and have the right association at the right time. That's why. My grandparents, they were too late. Today she's hard of hearing. She can hardly hear a word I say. See, I've got the Dhamma, but I can't give it to her. She's too late. And she's my grandmother. I love her dearly, but I can't give her the Dhamma. She's too late. What does that tell you about yourself? Bang on time. Bang on time. Perhaps, you know, in your 50s, maybe you're in your 60s. Right? And you're probably starting to think, well, I should probably think about retirement now, right? The last few years of my life. Maybe the last 20 years, last 30 years and so on. But even still, you came across the teaching. Can you imagine how lucky you are? So why do I believe that the Dhamma can heal, can fix this problem? It's by helping people to overcome their suffering by giving them the truth. When the mind doesn't suffer, it doesn't look for answers to suffering. Because if you don't suffer, you don't need it. If you don't have a wound, you don't look for a plaster, do you? If you don't have a headache, you don't go looking for paracetamol. If you don't have a cough, you don't go looking for a cough syrup. But these young people out there, they're looking for help because they need it and because they're suffering inside. Exam stress. Job stress. Stresses at work. Stress from their colleagues, peer pressures. Trying to live up to society's expectations of them. You know, nowadays, because we are such a global economy, we are a globalized nation, right? Today, you know, those days, you were only compared with your friends in class, in your own class. Right? Then you started to be compared with the friends in the same school, because each school had multiple classes. Right? You have grade 1A, grade 1B, grade 1C, grade 1Z. Yeah? So, now children are compared with your peers in multiple classes, then across schools. Here's what technology has enabled us to do. Today, we can compare how well your child is doing with a child in China. Can't you? So it's not just about competing with your peers, not just about competing with the children in your own classroom, but about competing with people, with young children, with others around the globe. Thank God we haven't discovered aliens yet. Imagine when that happens. How much did you get from math? There's an alien on Andromeda. They got an A star. What did you get, Puta? Yes, technology is a blessing. I'm a technologist myself. Half my life I worked with technology. Technology is a blessing. Is it not because of technology we are here today? Is it not the four wheels that brought you here? And if there's the odd Sunday you can't come here, thanks to technology you're able to listen to it from your own homes. Right? Technology is a blessing. It's like a knife. A knife is a blessing in the right hands. But in the wrong hands, it can cause devastation. So it's not enough to teach children about technology alone. We have to teach them how to use technology for the right things. To teach them that, they need to be instilled with the values, with the virtues, with what being a human being is about. Folks, this is what I ask you to take part in. I can't give you an agenda. I can't give you a long list or a bucket list of things and now I ask you to, you know, go and do this, go and do that. Because I don't know where you come from. I don't know what you're connected to, who you're connected to. I don't know where you, you know what your walk of, what walk of life you come from. I don't know whether you're teachers or professors in universities. I don't know. Whether you're a mother or a father, I don't know. If you bring your child here with you, then of course I know. Perhaps you're a mother or maybe an aunt. But besides that, I don't know who you are. Maybe you work at a newspaper. Maybe you're an author. Maybe you're a speaker. Maybe you're a principal. Maybe you are responsible for developing a syllabus. Perhaps. But you will all have some influential power on, if not the whole world, at least on one person. That might be your spouse. That might be your own child. Do what you can. I'm not asking for the moon. I'm only asking you to do what you can. I can go hungry, it's fine. Don't worry about that. I can go on an alms round. Let them earn those merits. Give me an alms bowl and send me off. I'll go and find something to eat. Let them worry about that. But they can't do that. The poor people on Obesekaripura, you know, they can't do that. They can't do what you can do. They can't do that. They're just barely making, you know, finding a meal to make ends meet. But if we can get them to give half of what they have, they'll start the receiving process by giving something. That is what they can do for the sasana. That is all they can do for the sasana today. But you can do much more. I don't know what you can do, because that's not for me to know. It's for you to know and for you to find out. But whatever it is you can do, folks, do in the name of the sasana. I'm not asking for an almsgiving at the temple. That's not what I'm asking for. There are devotees who come to the monastery and they'll do that. And nowadays, you know, one person cannot feed the entire monastery. It's almost impossible. We have 450 mouths to feed every day. Two meals at least. Young children we have there, at least three meals. There are people who have committed themselves. They've said, Swami Nahansa, even if I starve, I'll ensure that all the Swami Nahansas at the monastery, all the Anagarika children, they'll all be fed, even if I have to starve. I'll sell my house if I have to, but I will not make you go hungry. People have committed themselves. This is giving all they have to the sasana. But that is not what I'm asking from you. Let them do that. There are those who make the first and foremost offering from whatever they earn. It is a practice that we've inherited from our forefathers. You know, when the farmers used to go and cultivate the lands, right? When they get the crop, the first crop, who do they offer it to? The Buddha Sasana. That is why we were known as the barn of the Eastern world. We always got, we were bountiful and we were beautiful. We always got, because we always gave. That is why. But today we have nothing. We have to import everything. And all that we have seem to be leaving our country. You know this more than I do. All the intelligent people, all the people who are actually capable of doing something, they're leaving us. What's the word for it?
Brain drain.
Brain drain. Thank you, sir. Because they don't feel that this is their family. They don't feel this is their home. They don't feel like they can do something here. They don't feel like they can make a change. But we can. See, I would be the first to put my hand up and say, I thought that was true. Brain drain. I did that myself. But then I realized, no. There's a bigger call. There's a bigger purpose. I was born a human being. I was born Sinhalese. I was born a Sri Lankan. I was born into a Buddhist family. I had a much bigger call. I came back. I came back to talk to you. I came back to look at you in your faces and tell you the truth. I came back to share with you what has healed me. So once again, I invite you to be part of this. For as long as the Buddha Sasana will prevail, ladies and gentlemen, our country will prevail. Our nation will prevail. As soon as the Buddha Sasana goes extinct, this land will never be the same again. I'm not talking about Buddhism as a religion. Please do understand. I'm not talking about Buddhism as a religion. Buddhism may be a religion, call it what you may. I don't subscribe to that. I subscribe to Buddhist teaching, I subscribe to Buddhist philosophy. This is a science. Every man, woman and child deserves this. Regardless of race, regardless of gender, regardless of their belief systems, regardless of their faith. In fact, regardless of whether they're dead or alive. They all deserve this. Play your part in taking this message far and wide. If you can learn a language, if your children are still young, right? It's a fantastic time to start learning a language. It is said up until the age of about 25, 27, that time, you know, the linguistic skills are still very, very much functional. So if your children are young, teach them another language and bring them here. Here they'll learn the Dhamma, but teach them Spanish. Teach them Italian, teach them French. Samanas, we've already been doing that because my plan was to send my child to France. I hear you say. Good, well, carry on teaching them. Then it's only my part that's left to play out. If you bring them here, I can talk to them. I can talk sense into them. That won't make them any less studious. I was the first in my class. At my university, I came out first. I won the Queen's Award for the best dissertation. Her Majesty's Award. No, I'm not boasting. I'm just sharing with you the fact that the Dhamma has nothing to do with your worldly success. At the same time, I was also volunteering at the university. And I won the Vice Chancellor's Award for the best volunteer of the year. There were a bunch of people who were, some had autism, some had Alzheimer's, right, in the local area, and it was my job to go and work with them, to teach them IT as best as I could. Like I said, I worked in technology. I loved technology. I still do. I use it today to help people, to connect the dots, so that Dhamma can flow. So I have the right to speak to you, ladies and gentlemen, because I have become successful in my own life. And I speak to you. Go on to achieve whatever success you seek in life. Help your children to do that as well. I don't think you need me to spell that out to you. You do that anyway. But what I'm saying is, give them the Dhamma alongside that. This has to run parallelly. Because happiness in life is not dependent on what you learn from your textbook. It is dependent on your philosophy in life. Your attitudes, your behavior towards others. That has to come through the Dhamma. And I'm always reminded of this. The people who I speak to are not the people who need this. What a shame. You're here, right? So I ask you to come here. The people who need to hear these words are the people who are not here. It's a perfect trap, is it not? Who are the people who go to the seminars? The people who have a rich man's mindset, they go to the seminars. How to make money? How to make $1 million? Now, it's the people who are willing to make the change, they go to the seminars. But the people who need to hear it are out on the streets. Catch 22. What to do? I always scratch my head thinking, you know, how do I change that? But unfortunately, that cannot be changed. That is just the way it is. I'm speaking to a people who want to make a change, who are willing to go that extra mile, right? Who are willing to make a change in their lives, who are willing to bring themselves here, bring their family here, bring their friends here, bring their siblings here, bring their children here. I'm speaking to people who are willing to do that. And I'm saying, please bring yourself here. It seems counterintuitive, really. There's no point asking you to come here, you're already here. But hey, what can I do? I can only speak to the people who are willing to listen to me. In the hope that one day, even as you try to listen to the next album on YouTube or something, or you're trying to find the next episode of Game of Thrones, you know, someone might accidentally click on this sermon and listen to it. In that hope, I speak. But here's what I ask of you once again, and lastly, what time is it? Is the time right on this? It says 11:15. Is it? Good heavens. I haven't even started talking to you yet. This was not the plan. I wanted to talk to you about Rupedana Sanya Sankara Vinyana. I'm not going to talk to you about that then. I do hope these words are making a change in your lives. I really hope so. Join this mission. And you can all, you don't have to become monks for that. You don't have to be a nun for that matter. You don't have to be a monk for that, sir. This is the fourfold community of the Sangha. Bhikkhu, Bhikkhuni, Upasaka and Upasika. All four have their part to play. Visakha had her part to play. Kosala Mallika had her part to play. King Ajatasattu had his part to play. Yes, he went on to commit patricide, but he still had his part to play. The Emperor Ashoka, he had his part to play. The chief benefactor, Anathapindika, he had his part to play. We all have our part to play. The Buddha had his part to play. The great elder Sariputta Thera, he had his part to play. The Upali Thera, he had his part to play. As the foremost in the Vinaya, he had his part to play. Everyone has their part to play. It's like the four wheels of a car. Each wheel has its part to play. Its place is there, and it plays its part. So each and every one of you, you have your part to play. Someone realizes that they have a part to play, that's why we are all here in this room. They're playing their part. It's not small, it's not a small part, it's a big part. They're playing their part. The security officers outside, guarding your vehicles, I wish I could speak to them, but they're playing their part. It is because of them you are able to sit down here and comfortably listen to this sermon without a fear or a worry that something untoward might happen to your vehicle. He gets a wage, but he doesn't get this. The janitor, he'll come and sweep this place. He'll lock the rooms up. He'll set the place up. And he'll leave. He plays his part. The traffic police officer, he played his part to ensure you got here. Your grade one teacher played their part. They taught you the alphabet that got you here. Everyone has their part and everyone plays their part. Are you playing yours? I'm afraid I didn't get to talk about everything I want to talk about today, but I'll tell you this as my last words for today. You know, in life, no matter what you do, ladies and gentlemen, if you decide to put your heart to it, put your 100% into it. Can you look at me and tell me that I've not put 100% into it? I wanted Nibbana. So I put 100% of myself into Nibbana. My robe is evidence of that. I'm not messing around with anything. I'm not messing around with Nibbana. If I want Nibbana, I want Nibbana. Because successful people in life, they don't work in halves. They focus. And whatever they want in life, they go 100%. That is how they go on to become successful people in life. Choose your path in life and invest 100% of yourself into it. I can't ask all of you to come into a row because I know you're not all ready for it. But wherever you are, whatever your 100% is right now, put that 100%. Your 100% may not be my 100%, and that's fine. Today you're a mother, I'm not. So I will never have to put 100% motherhood into anyone's life. But if you are a mother, put 100% of yourself into the upbringing of your child. Whatever role you play in life, put your 100% into it. Put your whole heart into it. Then, even if it doesn't work out, you have zero regrets. I don't want to be the man who on his deathbed thinks to himself, oh, how I could have attained Nibbana if on that day when my teacher asked me to come into a robe, I only said yes. I don't want to be that man because I don't want to die a sorry death. I want to die a happy man. It was enough I came into this world crying. I don't want to leave this world crying. Live your life so that when you come into this world, everyone else is laughing and cheering, but you are the one who's crying. But when you leave, everyone else is crying. Everyone else is grieving. But you, victorious, you're the one who's laughing. Ensure you always have the last laugh. Wherever you are right now, wherever you have, you feel there's a summon, you feel there's a call, you feel that there's something that you have to do to become successful, put your 100%. And here's how you can do that. I'll give you a simple tip. Whenever something is expected of you, if it's something good, if it's something you really want to do, if you feel passionate about it, do your best and then some. I'll say that again. If ever something you want to do, you're passionate about, you really care about it, you really want it, do your best and then some. That then some, that little bit more, that little bit extra, is what 99% of people are not willing to do. That is why only 1% of this world's population are really the truly successful people in whatever venture they decide to take in their life. You know this. 1% of the world's population control the entirety of the world. They control the economy, they control the finances, they control the banking system, they control property, they control the whole world. 1%. Because they give their everything and then some. So when it comes to Nibbana, folks, I give my everything and then some. That then some is what is going to stretch you. It's what's going to make you move forward. It's what's going to be, it's going to be that carrot that's held in front of you. So you want to keep going forward. It is that drive that gets you out of bed. It is that energy that keeps bubbling inside, never letting you to stop, relax, take a breath. It always wants to keep making, it just keeps you going until you have achieved the object of your desire. There are people who do this when it is something bad that they need, something terrible. When they want to commit genocide, they do this. They do the best and then some. Well, if it can be used for bad, if it can be used for evil, why not use it for good? So, I know you're all different, although you're all the same, in another vein. Right? I know you've all got your own commitments, you've all got your own obligations and responsibilities, so your 100% will be different. This good lady's 100% will be different to the lady behind her. Your 100% will be different. Perhaps your 100% is coming here on a Sunday morning. Perhaps. Maybe it's coming here every other Sunday morning. Because one Sunday you have to go to the church, the other Sunday you come here. Fair enough. There are those among you who do that. Fair enough. That is your 100%. But always look for that then some. That then some will always keep pushing you. Is this my 100%? Can I not do a little bit more? That is what takes you to the pinnacle of your success. Whether it is education, whether it's your financial success, whether it's your family life, whether it's wanting to become the top in whatever walk in life. Always be the one who does your best and then some. You can't quantify that then some. You can't put a percentage on it. You can't tell how heavy it is or how big it is. It's down to you what your then some is. Here's me putting my everything and then some. So, I apologize for today. I didn't realize that time had flown. It says, you know, when you're enjoying yourself, time flies. So I must have really enjoyed myself today. I looked at the clock earlier. It was, what, 8:45? And I look at it again and it's 10:45. This was not how it was planned out. But I promise you, next week, if you're here, and if I am here, I'll give you my best, and then some. Right, let's wrap up for today then. Let's take a moment to transfer the merits that we have all acquired to all those who deserve it, and with gratitude and gratefulness to all who go all the way, who leave no stone unturned for us to unite like this, come together, and enjoy in this moment of freedom. Let us take a moment to transfer merits to all of them. I hope you're saying Theruvan Sarnai to the security guards on your way out. I hope you're doing that. At least let them get that out of this. For guarding your vehicles, to keeping you safe, to washing the washrooms, give them that Theruvan Sarnai. Wish them well. May you be well. May you be happy. Give them that. So that they can be glad that all they're doing has been worthwhile. Alright. Let's take a moment then to transfer all the merits that we have acquired today by making offerings to the Noble Triple Gem, inviting the Swami Nvahanse to deliver a sermon, listening to the sermon, and creating the environment that has been conducive to conduct the sermon, and bringing along your friends, family, and everyone who you could gather up today. Let us take a moment to transfer this message to those who are deserving of it, first and foremost reminding ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be in receipt of the Lord Buddha's teaching. Let us take a moment to transfer this message to the bhikkhus and bhikkhunis, upasakas and upasikas, who since time immemorial have protected and preserved the sublime teachings of the Buddha, and passed it down through the generations of the noble lineage in the form of the Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, understand and comprehend the Dhamma. Let us take a moment to transfer these merits to all members of the Mahasangha present throughout the world, including the chief prelates of all of the chapters who have dedicated their lives to the noble path and have committed themselves towards the betterment of all sentient beings. Let us not forget that amongst them are the monks and nuns resident in your local temples and nunneries, who have always been by your side through thick and thin, come rain or shine. Let us take a moment to transfer this message to my teacher, Guru Swami Nvahanse, as well as all the monks resident at the monastery, and the Anagarika and Anagarika communities attached to the monastery. Let us take a moment to transfer these merits to those who make great efforts to disseminate the teachings of the Buddha, be that by transliterating these talks, sharing them out with others across the internet, far and wide, to those who make great efforts to share this Dhamma and spread it throughout the world. Let us take a moment to transfer these merits to our devotees and friends of the monastery, who for the sake of merits to help them attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana, continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes all of you who have contributed to the construction of the monastery, to those who provide the Mahasangha with shelter, arms, robes and medicines, as well as those who extend their know-how and continue to extend their well wishes. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to our mothers and fathers, husbands and wives, brothers and sisters, sons and daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews and nieces, our friends, our acquaintances, our teachers, our employers and our employees, and to all those who have helped us, supported us and assisted us in any way, shape or form. By the power of these merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful planes, they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to the devas and brahmas, spirits and demons, primarily the Sakadeva, as well as all the numerous gods and deities who have committed themselves to preserve and fulfill the Sambuddha Sasana. Let us take a moment to transfer these merits to those who are our guardian deities, who keep a watchful eye over us and keep us out of harm's way. May they prosper in divine power and wisdom. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to those who have lost their lives in our names, those who have passed away in our names, our forefathers, our ancestors, those who have predeceased us, our forefathers who shed their blood, sweat and tears on our behalf, and it is in their labor that today we reap the fruits and enjoy the comforts and the luxuries that we have come to enjoy in our lives, which have helped us today to walk on the path of Dhamma. May they all rejoice in these merits. Let us also transfer these merits to the members of the armed forces as well as the police force who sacrifice their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation, as well as the leaders of our nation who govern our nation on our behalf. May they all rejoice in these merits. Let us also transfer these merits to those who have lost their lives from natural disasters, such as tsunamis, earthquakes, landslides, forest fires, blizzards, pandemics and so on, reminding ourselves that in this infinitely long journey of samsara, they will all have been mothers and fathers to us, brothers and sisters to us, friends and acquaintance to us, those who would have supported us, helped us and assisted us in any way, shape or form possible and available to them. May they all rejoice in these merits. May by the power of these merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful planes, they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, may by the power and blessings of all the merits we have acquired throughout the day, we be able to witness the advent of many hundreds of thousands of arahants on this blessed land. And may you and I, and everyone who has helped make this program a success, become a rahatan vahanse or an arahat teramin vahanse in this very life itself and in the era of the Gautama Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessings of the Noble Triple Gem be with you all. Members of the Mahasangha will now transfer their blessings to you.
Raga ginnang nidatnva, dvesha ginnang nidatnva, moha ginnang nidatnva, nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravetma, nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravetma, mamada siyalu loka siyalu satnayo, nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravetma, nibbana parama sukhayan sukhit taravitma nibbana parama sukhayan sukhit taravitma raga gini niveva desha gini niveva moha gini niveva nivansata ladeva nivansata ladeva nivansata ladeva
තුන්රුවන්ගේ සුවිසි අනන්ත මහා ගුණ බලෙන් සියලු ලෝක සියලු සත්වයෝම නිබ්බාන පරම සුඛයෙන් සුඛිතර වෙත්වා. සාදු සාදු සාදු.